Eastern family and friends. Welcome to our 48th radio episode, coming to you live from Jacksonville, Florida, West Palm Beach, Florida, Grand Junction, Colorado, and Rolling Gap, North Carolina. I'm Margaret Bars. I don't even know my own name tonight. I'm Margaret Bars, one of your hosts for tonight's show. I'm here in Jacksonville along with Neil Holland and Bud Hescott.
I'm checking to make sure it is me.
That is good. Jim Hart in West Palm Beach, Florida. Jim, I hope that's you. Bill Joseph in Grand Junction, Colorado, and Steve Thompson in Rolling Gap, North Carolina. And we don't want to forget Jan Butch-Kaye in Delray Beach, Florida. And, of course, our producer engineer is Eric Otero, computer wizard extraordinaire. Now, you may call us tonight at either of our two phone numbers, area code 213-816-1611, or you may call us toll-free at 877-572-1861. Either way, we want to hear from you. We try to bring you stories from Eastern's past, from those who participated in its history, and our lines are open during tonight's program we have for you. That is a bit of a departure from our normal historical theme. Since we're only a few days from Christmas, we thought we would share some personal stories about our Eastern or family Christmas memories. Our host may have a Christmas story or two for you. And we're fortunate tonight by having a very special guest, Kathleen Laper, an Eastern flight attendant and silver liner, that will tell us about a special Christmas event that takes place each year about this time for very special children. You may join us and tell about your own favorite Christmas story by again calling our toll-free number, 877-572-1861, or if you have unlimited long-distance service, you might want to give us a call at area code 213-816-1611.
It's great having all our guests with us tonight. Let's see who we have with us tonight. Steve Thompson, you're with us?
Yes, I am, Neil. Hi.
Okay, Bill Joseph out in Grand Junction. How are you tonight?
I'm fine, Neil. How about you?
Doing fine. And let's see, we've got Jim Hart down in South Florida, West Palm
Beach. Nice and balmy, 78 degrees.
Okay, is Jan with us tonight? I'm not certain whether she checked in with us or Howard Mucci. However,
I didn't hear her.
No. Okay. I want to start with my little story I'd like to share with you tonight, and just kind of picture the phone ringing 2 days before Christmas, and you're a pilot, and you answer by mistake. The call goes something like this. Captain Holland, this is Atlanta Crew Skid. We've got a trip for you. And wouldn't you know it, I'm a very junior captain, and guess who flies on all holidays? Very junior people. So I made the mistake by answering the phone. Most pilots knew how not to answer that phone around Christmas time, you know. But here's a story I wanted to share with you about my experience on that particular flight. You know, I was kind of hoping when crew sked called for my, I didn't know whether it was a turnaround. I was hoping it was a turnaround, I'd get back before Christmas, or whether it was going to be a three-day trip. And if it were going to be a three-day trip, I was sure hoping for, maybe a layover down in St. Thomas or San Juan or one of the Caribbean islands. But as it turned out, crew sked said, you're going to lay over in Allentown, Pennsylvania. Now, the city code for Allentown is ABE. Allentown serves Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, and Eastern Pennsylvania. So I was laying over in Bethlehem. So my layover on Christmas Eve was in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. And the crew, when we got to the hotel, needless to say, we were about the only folks in that hotel. Now, if you've ever been to Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, it's a beautiful little town. They have a little college there. I think it's called Lehigh College or Lehigh University or something like that. And a very pretty little town, but the entire town was closed up Christmas Eve. And the hotel staff was a skeleton crew there. But they did have dinner for us that night. And the next morning when we got up to leave, we didn't have to leave the hotel until around 9 a.m. They had breakfast all fixed for us in the dining room. And at each one of our settings, I think that was a 727 crew. We had three up front, and then we had about four flight attendants. And each one of us at the table that morning had a little gift. And it was all wrapped by the staff at the restaurant. And all of us opened our little gifts, and it was a coffee mug that had the Bethlehem Star, and it had the Bethlehem Hotel, which that was their logo. So I thought that was kind of cute, and I just wanted to share that little story with you.
I think that was great.
Any of you have any exciting Christmases you want to share with us?
Well, this is Steve Neal. I have one Christmas season story to share. When I was either in my first year or second year with Eastern in New York, this would have been in 57 or 58. I was furloughed for an entire month of December. And I did learn that the post office was hiring part-time help to deliver mail. And this area happened to be in an area around Levittown, New York. And so you would go to the post office and pick up your bag of mail, and then you'd start the deliveries. And most of these houses had a slot in the door, and you would lift up the slot with one hand and then guide the mail in with your other, with your fingers. Now, at least 25% of these houses had vicious dogs that just delighted. And about the time your fingers got through the slot, they would let out this blood-curdling gnashing of, and you could feel their teeth gnashing on your fingers. Well, this always just frightened me to no end, just scared me to death. And so finally, I learned what day of the week that their checks came in the mail. And then I decided to get even. I would take usually a government check of some sort, and I would put it in the slot, and I would just wiggle it around until the dog grabbed hold of that check. And then we would play tug of war with that check until it was shredded, and I just let it go. Well, that was a delightful thing for me to be able to do, to get back at being scared to death at these dogs trying to bite my fingers off. But there was an upside to this also. Another custom was that you would come up to some of these houses, and a door would open, and there would be a shot glass of whiskey. You couldn't see who was handing it to you, but you'd see the little shot glass of whiskey, and you'd down that, and that was just very, very warming and very welcomed.
So
that was my Christmas story during a furlough at Eastern.
Like you said, you had one that you wanted to share with us.
Did you say me, Neil?
Yeah, your time at Pat.
Back in 1966, I believe it was, it was the day before Christmas, so Christmas Eve day. I had to work in the office, and I told my wife, who was in Portland, Maine, waiting for me, that I would be up there on a Northeast Airlines flight. Well, the weatherman had other ideas. I did make it to Portland, but it was snowing so bad that we had trouble driving from the Portland airport down through Bath and Wiscasset and over to Damariscotta, where her mom and dad, my in-laws, lived at the time. And they lived 2 miles off the main road. Well, by the time we got to Damariscotta Lake, and get this now, we're also carrying our miniature poodle with us and whatever baggage we had. So I, thank goodness, was able to get in touch with the in-laws, and they said, listen, don't try to come in here because the road is impassable right now. Leave your car out on the main road. There's a farmer not too far from our entrance here. Leave it in his yard. Well, we plowed through the snow and got the car off the roadway, and then we proceeded to trek through the snow. The snow was up above our knees, and you can imagine we had to go from the main road into Damariscotta Lake with the snow up over our knees. And in fact, there were some drifts already starting. And by the time we got in there, I had the dog partially under my coat. My coat was open, and I'm trying to cuddle him up around my chest. And I tell you, we got in there. It took us the better part of an hour and a half to go that 2 miles. But when we got to the house, which is right on the lake, my father-in-law was waiting with a great big jug of Jim Beam. And we did quite a job on that jug of Jim Beam. And that was a Christmas Eve that I'll never, ever forget.
Bill, you're out there in Christmas land in Grand Junction. How's the snow? What's the readings? How many inches do you have?
Well, you know, I keep telling you folks, down here in the valley, we get very, very little snow, but the ski resorts are all open, and they had as much as 6 or 8 inches of snow just last week up there, fresh snow. So everything is a go for the season. It's on and running. If you like skiing, we've got plenty of it out here.
Yeah. You have any special memory of Christmas that you wanted to share with us, or all of
them? Well, you know, I don't have many Eastern memories of Christmas, although I had plenty of them. I do think Christmas is a kid's thing, and I can think back to when I was much, much younger. We were not a wealthy family as I was growing up. My mother and father both worked the whole time I was growing up. But we did always have a very nice Christmas, and it just seems to me that that's the things that I recall. And I know when I was in Hartford, we did the Silver Liner's flight to the North Pole, and that is very rewarding to see the children participate in that.
Yeah, we're going to talk to Kathleen Lapper in just a minute. I think Eric's putting in a call to her now. And we'll have her on the line because she just came in off that trip, I think about 2 weeks ago, she said. And so we want her to share some of the things that went on that flight. Reading a little bit about it, it must be very exciting for those children. And so we'll get the firsthand report. Margaret, do you have a favorite story that you remember about Christmas? Or Luann?
Well, actually, I think Luann is going to be calling in just a second.
Oh, okay.
Here. So
okay. We'll wait for her call.
We'll wait for her call.
Yeah. Oh, she's already on.
Oh,
she's
okay.
Up.
Hey, Luann. Hey, everybody. How y'all doing up there?
Doing fine, Luann. Yeah.
Well, I understand you're doing these Christmas stories, and I just wanted to share one with you. Now, the best Christmas that I can ever remember happened at our annual Hickorella Christmas Ball in Hazard, Kentucky.
Say that again, Hickorella,
not Cinderella.
Hickorella.
H-I-C-K, Hickorella.
Okay, I got it.
And, you know, we're all dressed up in our fancy-dancy clothes, and we're just having a great hoedown. That was a couple of years ago, and the musicians out there, boy, they were just making those guitars and banjos sing. Well, in comes my Aunt Pauline wearing this big old mink coat. Now, unfortunately, since she arrived late, most people were by about this point somewhat tipsy from the moonshine lace punch that we had. Well, several of them thought she was a big old bear, and they commenced to tackle her. But fortunately for her, she was a big woman, so she whooped up on them pretty good. And then when it came time to crown Miss Hickorella, somebody lit a whole pack of firecrackers, threw them up on the stage. Now, naturally, all the pretty paper and the little Christmas trees caught on fire.
You should have seen everybody trying to stomp out those little blazes. And after it was all over, we discovered that we had invented a brand new dance called the Christmas Stomp. It's now the new rage in Kentucky. So I wish all of you a very Merry Christmas and a happy dancing. If you want to learn that, just come to the Hickorilla Ball. Y'all welcome.
Very interesting. Very interesting. did you get? She's not answering. Okay. Well, you know, this time of year, I don't know about you guys, Jim and Bill, but like I said earlier, we pilots tried to avoid answering the phone. But I'm sure, Bill and Jim, you had to work Christmas Eve and Christmas holidays with Eastern, did you not?
Absolutely.
Did you have some kind of special parties and things like that there in operations?
I don't think operations did much except, in fact, they worked with a skeleton crew, if I remember. Bill, do you remember that as to Bradley?
I can remember that the employees always used to bring goodies from home and have them out in operations and up behind the ticket counter. That seems to be about a norm, don't you think?
Yeah, that's true. Bill, I wanted to mention to you that I've been in touch with Nick Malucci, and he is so happy for us to have gotten together. I've already mailed him a few items, and it looks like we're going to be getting together maybe on Martha's Vineyard. I invited him over next summer.
Well, that's good. You know, one of the things, it's not Christmas, but I had an experience in Thanksgiving time that I always remember, and that is that I was promoted from Tampa up to Providence, where I became the station manager in Providence, and this fell over the Thanksgiving weekend, and of course, one of the biggest travel times of the year for the airline. I was living in my little motel room and decided to go out and get Thanksgiving dinner. Across the street, they had a hotel that did have a dining room, and I went over, and I sat there and had my Thanksgiving dinner all alone, looking at all of the families gathered around their Thanksgiving dinners. My family was still living in Florida, and I vowed that I would never promote myself again into a situation like that, that I would always have a holiday with my family if I could. I knew the responsibilities of being there, particularly being, you know, new to the job.
Yeah.
But it was an eye-opening experience to see all those people with their young and old alike, and I was sitting there at my table for one. It was, I just ate and got out in a hurry. Let's just put it like that.
I think
Neil.
Yeah, Steve, go ahead.
Steve, when I'm up here in a little town called Sparta, I kept running into people who would know that I was with Eastern Airlines, and they would say that there is a street that's named Eastern Airlines Lane in a little town of Sparta. And it was bought by someone who was with Eastern Airlines and kind of made a little subdivision there. And the street that ran down through this little subdivision was called Eastern Airlines Lane. So I kept driving down by there to see if I could meet someone who lived on that and see if they were with Eastern. So I didn't have any success with that, but later on, as a matter of fact, when I was in the hospital here with my little incident, they kept telling me, well, you know, there's a person who is with Eastern that you would probably know, and his name was Walt Green. Do any of you remember that name?
I knew Walt Green when he was at Washington National Airport.
Yes, and he also was, I think he was the station manager at LaGuardia.
I think he was in the same division that I was in, which was the Northeast Division.
Yes, right. Well, I kept trying to get in touch with him, trying to get a phone number because I wanted to. As a matter of fact, I had hoped to be able to interview him on one of our radio shows. But then about 3 days ago, we were looking through the obituaries of our little county newspaper, and he passed away. So I just thought I would pass that along.
Yeah. Now, Walt Green, wasn't he a pilot?
No, he was. As I remember him, he was the station manager at LaGuardia, and
okay.
He was quite well known by all the pilots. He was very well known and very well liked.
Yeah, I'm thinking of Mel Green. I think I was thinking of Mel Green, and I think he passed away too. I see we have Kathleen Lapper on the line. Kathleen, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Welcome to our show, and thanks so much for letting us talk with you tonight about a very special flight that you just came in off of. I believe now, Kathleen, you were a flight attendant. Can you tell me when you were a flight attendant and where you were based?
Well, I was based in Atlanta from 73 to 78.
And you now are where? Where do you live now, Kathleen?
I live in the Detroit area, Rochester Hills, and this is where I grew up in this area, so I'm still here.
Well, Madge McGordy sent me an email last week, and that email had a URL address, and she wanted me to get it to as many people as I could get out the address. And when I tuned it in, it was a Fox video, or Fox News, had done a special on the flight, the North Pole flight.
Yeah.
And so she told me that to get in touch with you, Kathleen, and you could share a little bit about that flight and what it's all about and who sponsors it. And I believe you're a Silver Liner. Can you tell us a little bit of how it started?
Sure. The Silver Liners do this event, the flight to the North Pole, across the country. It's a nationwide endeavor that actually Dee Dee Skoog from the Milwaukee area started over 25 years ago. And the Detroit area has participated in this event every year since then.
Now, who pays for this? Is this all with different airlines? Is this how
it's paid for mostly with donations, and Delta Airlines has been the ones we use the plane with for the last several years, and before that it was Northwest. And then before that, it was American Transair, and before that, it was Eastern.
Okay, yeah. When you choose your passengers for the flight, how do you go about doing that, Kathy?
Well, I contact the representatives at some of the local area hospitals and tell them that we'd like to invite some of their sick children with life-threatening illnesses, to this fantasy flight to the North Pole, where we actually put them on an airplane, and we have a complete crew, pilots and flight attendants, and it's just like an actual flight, but we just taxi around, and the pilot revs up the engine real loud, and then backs off, and we all keep our shades down because we're told that the snow is so bright at the North Pole that it could hurt your eyes. And so we never actually leave the ground, but the kids don't know or really even care. So they're just having a good time. They have lunch on board, and we're out for about an hour. And then we return to the airport, and Santa greets them at the gate when we arrive and leads them to an area in the Westin Hotel that we have transformed into a magical North Pole.
A couple of questions, Margaret.
Yes, Kathleen, I'd like to ask you, are there toys on the airplane? Do you hand out toys to them? Or
No, that would be after the flight,
okay.
because they're just supposedly flying to the North Pole, where they're going to visit with Santa, and they have a magic show, and there's Trixie, the two tall elf, paints faces, and they get to visit with Santa, and they get a big bag of toys. These toys are all donated by local area businesses, and we've just been very blessed to receive all that we do over the years.
Yeah, how long?
Kathleen, this is Steve Thompson. I remember this being a long time tradition, and as I remember it started in the New York area, maybe even LaGuardia Airport. At Eastern, as a matter of fact, I remember this occurring with these fantasy flights occurring with a Constellation at LaGuardia Airport.
Yes, it probably is correct. I'm not sure that that's where it started necessarily, but as I said, we do this across the country. Our different chapters, all of our chapters participate in this if they can. Not all of them are able to get an airplane these days because that's, of course, a big expense and not something that's real easy to do. So Delta has been very helpful. I said our biggest competitor turns out to be, from the days, turns out to be our best buddy these days with our flight to the North Pole. But they're wonderful with us and give us a lot.
Usually, how many children do you take? Well, I guess it depends on the size of the airplane, but the flight that you just came in from a couple of weeks ago, Kathy? How many people were on that flight?
We invite 60 children, and we ended up with about 45 because some of them are actually too ill to come that day. But then we have the Shrine Circus clowns that come on board the flight with us, and we have a lady who plays the keyboard, and we sing Christmas carols on the flight, and then all of our Silver Liners and some other representatives also come on board, and we fill up I can't remember the size of this airplane last week, but I know it had two aisles, so it was pretty big.
Do you get to wear your uniform, Kathy?
No, that's a good thing, too, because I don't think it'd be pretty tight.
Well, Bill,
I remember at Eastern it getting an awful lot of publicity. That was a very, I think, a welcomed expedition for publicity-wise for Eastern.
Yes, we do get a lot of publicity, and we have made sure that we have big banners made up that say Eastern Airlines Silver Liners, sponsored by Eastern Airlines Silver Liners. So even though Delta is our airplane and our carrier, this event is sponsored by Eastern Airlines Silver Liners. So we're very proud of that, and we don't want to lose that, you know.
Yeah, that's great. That's super.
Yeah.
Is Santa Claus on board, or does he wait till you get to your destination?
That's the captain, isn't it?
No, he's waiting for the children when we get to the gate.
Okay.
And he gives each one of them a hug, and then we gather as a group and walk over to the North Pole area that we've decorated, and that's where we have a party for the kids. And they're between the ages of 2 and 8.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
Some of them are pretty sick. Others are in remission. We had a couple this year that were quite ill in their wheelchairs. And I know one probably won't be making it much longer. So it's just wonderful that we can do this for them.
Yeah.
Because some of them may not ever see another Christmas.
Boy, this is a fabulous way of keeping the name of Eastern Airlines out there. the legacy of Eastern. It's just heartwarming. Bill, you said something about having a flight out of where you were one Christmas, right?
Oh, we did it several years. The Silver Liners in Hartford were very, very active with this. In fact, we had the president of the National Silver Liners came from our chapter in Hartford at one time. So those girls put this on several years in a row, and the publicity was such you couldn't buy this kind of publicity. It was absolutely fantastic. And to see the kids and what they enjoyed from it, it really warmed your heart at Christmas time, I'll tell you that.
That's for sure. It's the best thing I do all year.
Right.
So I look forward to it.
And you've been doing it. Now, how many, along with yourself, how many other Eastern folks will be on that flight with you?
We have approximately 10 members in our Motown chapter, and most of them come out and participate every year. So that would be it as far as the Eastern people go.
Do you get other volunteers from other carriers to assist you?
We have. Like I said, we had Northwest before they merged or whatever that happened with that, and American Trans Air. And so.
What I was thinking, do you get other flight attendants from like Northwest or?
We try to keep it as ours.
Yeah. Oh, I can understand. Being a United pilot on an Eastern Airlines radio show, I understand wholeheartedly.
Yeah.
Well, now the Silver Liners, they have other activities that they're involved in. Can you tell us what else your Silver Liner group participate in as far as what they sponsor, some of the projects?
Oh, well, we have an international charity that we support, the Paul Newman's Hole in the Wall Gang Camp in Connecticut. And, in fact, when this other pilot was talking about the Connecticut North Pole, that was probably Lois Morton you were
talking
about.
That's right. That's exactly who it was.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Because she was our international president at one time. And so she's very active in the Hole in the Wall Gang Camp. And so we've built a cabin there with the Silver Liners name on it. And we continue to donate money to them. And all the chapters do different things around the country. So we all do different charitable events.
Let me offer a suggestion, Kathy. We have this Eastern DC 7 Historical Foundation now.
Yes.
DC 7. Wonder if the Silver Liners could get in touch with the foundation and put something on using the DC 7 every year. I would think that would really tie in the Silver Liners, and you could use your uniforms and so forth, and really make an occasion. Of course, that would be probably out of South Florida.
But, yes. Well,
I think that would be a great idea.
I think so, too. I really do. Do you know that Florida Gulf Coast chapter just told me the other day they want to get a lot of information. Of course, they're in the Tampa area, but they want to get more information about the North Pole because they haven't participated in it, and they really want to get involved. We do have a Fort Lauderdale chapter and a Miami chapter. Well, maybe Miami and Fort Lauderdale's combined now. We have a Florida Keys chapter, West Palm Beach. So I just think that's a great idea because I'm sure, those girls would be thrilled to be able to use that plane.
Jim Hart, listening as
yes,
a host.
Neil.
Yeah, maybe you can get in touch because I think you have better contact with Roger Jarman.
Yeah.
And see, if they would be interested in coordinating something like this with the Silver Liners to offer continuing this tradition of this North Pole flight.
That sounds like a good idea. I'll be happy to get in touch with Roger. And Kathy, do you have a telephone number that I could use when I speak with Roger?
Yes, yes, I do. And I have an email address as well.
I've got it, Jim, and I'll just pass it on to you.
Okay, good. I have another question of Kathy. Kathy, I lived in the area of Paul Newman. My first Rotary Club was the Rotary Club of Summers, Connecticut, which is not too far from Stafford Springs, and you just hop over I-84 and you're there. And at the Rotary Club, we actually built for Mr. Newman and his group a petting zoo. Do you ever remember seeing anything, or when you were out there, anything indicating that the Rotary Club of Summers was involved?
The petting zoo was at the camp?
Yeah,
or somewhere?
At the camp.
Well, you know, I haven't been there that often. Perhaps Lois Morton would know more about that, but I've really only been to the camp twice in the last 3 years. So I wouldn't know for sure, but she'd be able to answer that possibly.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay, no problem.
I want to just make a suggestion to all of the folks. At this time of year, I've thought about Floyd Hall and up in Vermont, and I've just sent out a Christmas card. I think it'd be good to have as many people that can drop a Christmas card to Floyd, and I wanted to give the address of Mr. Hall and where he is there in Woodstock, Vermont. So anyone listening tonight, you feel like you would be able to put a card in the mail and address it to Mr. Floyd Hall. And he is in care of Mertina House. That's Merton's House, Mertens. Merton's House, and the address there is 73 River Street, Woodstock, Vermont, and the zip code is 05091. I haven't talked to Mr. Hall in a while, and I wanted to call him this weekend, and it just slipped my mind, but I think it'd be a good idea that as many people as possible from the Eastern family to drop him a card and wish him good holidays. And I'm certainly he'd be happy to hear from as many people as possible. Bill, you usually keep up with Mr. Hall. Have you talked to him recently?
No, I haven't talked to him recently, but I was going to bring that up in the program tonight, and I'm glad you did. I dropped a card in the mail to him today.
Yeah. His wife emailed me, and she said that, or his daughter, rather, emailed me and said he appreciated so many cards that have come to him since he's been in this home there in Woodstock, Vermont. And Mr. Hall is 95 years old, and he was a great leader of Eastern Airlines for many years. So I think he would be happy to hear from all of the Eastern family.
You know, I commenting on him, and I think I have done this before. I think that in my view, that he was the most revered leader of Eastern Airlines in my career.
Here, here.
Except for maybe Captain Eddie.
Yeah.
But he was on top of the list, and there were some other folks that were to me on the bottom of the list too. Who I won't name, but we all know who they are.
Well, he came on board when I was hired, and of course I lasted a little bit longer than he did with Eastern, because I think he went out with about 1978, I believe. Do you recall the last years of Eastern? I think he had 15 years with Eastern. as a president.
I don't remember when he went out, but he was just, I just remember him being so Mr. Eastern Airlines. Even though he was Mr. TWA before that, he was just revered by everybody that worked with this company.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you, Kathleen. Thank you so much for your information about the Silver Liners, and we put some of this information on our website, and you can go and look at the video that was done by Fox News up in Detroit about that flight that you were on, and a great little video clip there. I think it lasts about 5 minutes. And it is on the website, and that's www.EALRadioShow. Just a couple of questions. You have a trivia question about the North Pole, Margaret?
Actually, I do. I was wondering if anyone would know this. Here's the question. If you were leaving the North Pole, what heading would you take to go to, say, New York, San Francisco, Japan, London, and Atlanta? Does anyone know?
Now, which North Pole are you talking about?
The true North Pole.
Oh, the true one. Because there, I have been to the North Pole in Alaska.
Yeah. The true North Pole. That's a good question, Margaret. If you were going to leave the true North Pole, going to London or to New York, what heading would you take? Any thoughts or any answers?
Really simple.
It's very simple.
Very simple.
Wouldn't be right. 360, would it?
Well,
that was close.
Wait a minute, we have the buzzer.
Let United Captain tell us how to get there.
Yeah, fly heading 180 until seeing London.
Which direction, though?
You said we head south.
Oh, very good.
180. Call a Boy Scout.
Yeah.
Is that lady from Detroit still on, Kathleen?
I'm still here.
Kathleen, I was wondering if you had run into a fellow up there in the Detroit area by the name of Henry Felker.
Oh, name sounds really familiar.
He was our manager of sales and service in Detroit for a long time. I think he lives in the town of Plymouth.
Okay. As I say, the name sounds familiar, but I wouldn't really know him.
Okay.
Bill?
Yes.
Henry Felker was a sales rep in Philadelphia when I was one of those city sales people in D.C. And when flight checks first come out, I had a little bit of difficulty trying to get some of my guys to come down to the ticket counter with me first thing in the morning to visit with business people and to put those flight checks in their hands. So I called Hank Felker. He said, "Hey, Jim, I'd love to have the help. Come on up here." So I took an early morning trip and went up there, and he and I, in front of the Philadelphia ticket counter, put I don't know how many flight checks in the hands of our frequent travelers. Now, I've been in touch with Hank, and he lives on the Maryland shore, I believe, now.
I see.
I can...
Yes,
when
I met him, Jim, he was still in Philadelphia, but I think he finished his career up in Detroit.
Okay. I guess he had a fondness for the Maryland shore, and I do have an address for him down there. I'll try to get that and see that... I get it to you, okay?
That'll be fine. Just shoot me an email.
Okay, very good. I'm not sure I have your email address. Do I?
I think you do. Look in your book.
Oh, yes. Yes. Yes, and, of course, you sent me the email about Nick Melucci, so I have that here as well.
Well, you know,
great.
When
Thank
I was
you.
A sales manager in Baltimore, I used to call on the Eastern Shore. I used to go down to Easton and all the way down to the end.
That was one day's work.
Took all the way down there.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
Jack Cotton the station manager then?
No. Jack Cotton, I think by then, was in Daytona Beach.
Okay.
The guy there was Joe Cherney.
Okay, see, I used to cover Baltimore when I was in the district, and what's the McCormick Spices and USF&G and a whole host of them there. I got to know them pretty well.
Yeah, there's a lot of good commercial accounts in the Baltimore area.
The only thing is, being in Washington, I had to have two sets of business cards. And Jack Cotton let me have a desk. Well, you know, the Mason-Dixon line causes some concern to people there. And so I, if anyone called Jack Cotton's office looking for Jim Hart, the secretary in the office would call Washington and say, "Hey, Jim, McCormick Spice is trying to get in touch with you." So I called them from Washington, and they thought that I was calling from Friendship Airport, you know. That was something.
Yeah.
That's beautiful country around the Eastern Shore. I, after Eastern shut down, had a little time that I spent in Easton at the Easton Airport, and I lived in a little town called St. Michael's. Remember that little town?
Absolutely.
The prettiest little
town. Soft shell crab country.
Yes, it is. What do they call the watermen or the fishermen? They call them the ones that go out and harvest the crabs. They have a name for them, the fishermen. They don't call them fishermen. There's some other name for them. No.
Crabby men.
But
you know, there's a young lady from over there on the shore that's been on some of the Learning Channel or something. She's written a book, and she's from Maine. She's not from the Eastern Shore. She's a crabber from Maine. And she's just written a book all about crabbing up there in Maine.
Oh. I think they're called watermen. I believe they're called watermen. I believe that's what they call them. But I was with a little airline up there, chief pilot, little small airline, Maryland Air.
You ever hear of an airport called PGS?
Did you know Dick Henson?
Dick Henson, no. That name doesn't
Henson,
ring a bell.
Henson Aviation out of Hagerstown.
Yeah.
He ran all the commuters for U.S. Air Allegheny at the time from the Eastern Shore and also from Hagerstown into Baltimore and Washington. He had quite an operation. He was a good man.
Yeah. They used to fly Beach 99s, I believe. And then
exactly.
Then he got the Skyvan.
Yep.
And the big rumor going around was that something about the captain had to make the captain had to wash the airplane before he could fly it. And the reason being is the company policy was that no Henson pilot, the captain of the shorts, the SD-330 short aircraft, had to wash the airplane before he would fly it because the company policy was no Henson pilot would fly in dirty shorts.
No Henson pilot in dirty shorts. Well, I think we've gone a little bit too far in our program tonight. But I want to tell you a little bit about our Christmas Eve special that we've got coming up. We're going to broadcast our next Monday show, which would be the 19th. We're going to broadcast it December 24th, and it's going to be a Christmas Eve special. We think you'll enjoy the Santa Flight 2011, as we call it, Santa Flight 2011. And it's scheduled for departure from the North Pole Airport at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, and that's on December 24th. So our next Monday show will be delayed until the 24th, Christmas Eve. And the show has been pre-recorded, and it would be a great Christmas evening entertainment for the kids. So anyone listening that have grandchildren, I think we all have grandchildren at this point in our lives, it would be a great program to let them listen to it, and especially folks that enjoy aviation, you'll find this show will encompass many aspects of airline operations, Santa Claus style. So try not to miss episode 49. That's the way it appears on our lineup, episode 49, and make sure that you go to the archive if you missed that show. You can pick it up at any time after December 24th because it will be archived as episode 24, and it's the Christmas special. And I think this is going to be something that we might just broadcast every Christmas, or as many Christmases as this show lasts. But a couple of things that I've often wondered about is the time zone at the North Pole. Bud, you have some information, I think, before we go off here about the time zone up in the North Pole.
Well, it has two time zones up there. One's called the Santa Claus Standard Time, or SCST, and that's from January 2nd to November 30th for each year. The Santa Claus Standard Time is UTC, Greenwich Mean Time, plus 12.
12 hours.
Uh-huh. 12 hours, yes, sir. Santa Claus Delivery Time, SCDT, is from December 1st to January 1st each year. And the Santa Claus Delivery Time is UTC, GMT, plus 13 hours.
That's the time zone change.
That's the time zone changes that you get from Greenwich Mean Time to local time in the North Pole. And then you have TimeGenie.com, which is to thank Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer for delivery of the Santa press release to us.
That's what we just read, press release.
Very good.
Because we want everyone to know that there is an official Santa Claus time, and the North Pole has two time zones. As a matter of fact, the time sets, I mean, at the true North Pole, the sun rises and sets once a year.
Once a year.
Once a year at the true North Pole. Now, there's a difference between the true North Pole and the magnetic North Pole.
True.
Where would you think that the true North Pole is? Do you think it's on some landmass? Anyone out there listening? Our host?
I believe it's out over the water, isn't it?
It is. It's the true North Pole is right in the middle of the Arctic Ocean. And
the coordinates, I believe this is for true north.
That's the coordinates would be 90 degrees north.
Right.
And 360 degrees all the way around the compass, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because there is no longitude. There are 360 degrees of longitudes. Hey, I used to teach navigation, come to think of it.
Wow. Yeah, I'm impressed.
That was a long, long time ago. But as a matter of fact, when I got my instructor, my ground school instructor rating, that's what I taught. It was about the time zones and the changes and how it affects navigation. But anyhow, that's about all we have for tonight, and want to make sure that all you folks will try to tune in on the 24th, December 24th. We've got a real special show, and I think you'll really enjoy it. It's very cute, and it's to the point, and the point is airlines and aviation. So I think you'll like Santa Claus's operation in the North Pole and what he goes through to get his sleigh ready for his once-a-year flight. So all of that will be coming in that episode. So I'd like to say to all of our hosts, I hope you guys have a great, great Christmas. Very Merry
Same
Christmas.
Same to you, Neil. Same to you.
And to
all of you from Roaring Gap, North Carolina, a very merry, merry Christmas, and it's been fun, everybody.
Thank you.
And don't forget, when the temperature gets below 65, throw another log on there.
Well, I just want to say Merry Christmas to Neil and Bud, Jim, Steve, Bill, and a special thank you to Kathleen for being on the show tonight. Very Merry Christmas.
That was right.
Thanks to everybody.
My Merry Christmas to everyone, too. It was a pleasure working with you. Thank you.
Merry Christmas, everyone.
Eric, thanks so much for producing our show, Eric Otero, and we couldn't do without him. And we'll see you after Christmas, and we'll have probably one final show then. So happy Hanukkah and Merry Christmas to everyone.
Good night, everyone.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
body telling, I'm practically yelling, Vancouver beat the Avalanche, no one gives a crap. I get to thinking the beer